Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Well, good morning, everybody. 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. About, maybe around 6 years ago, Ron Thompson brought in a young guy that was going to be his replacement for the Washington County Water Conservancy District. That guy's name, he had a little more hair back then, but he was not any taller than he is right now. His name is Zach Renstrom. Zach, how are you, man?
Hey, it's good to be here.
Thanks for coming in. Do you remember that first time you came in here?
Oh yeah. I remember coming on here with Mark.
Mark.
The guy before you.
Oh, Mike. And Gary. Okay, Mike. Yeah, Mike, yeah.
So, it's crazy how time flies.
Yeah, and by the way, hello, our good friend made it in just now. She's not early, but she doesn't get paid to be here early, right, Carrie? Right. Carrie Rathje I'm talking about, and she doesn't like us to turn the microphone on, so we won't this time. But thank you both for being here, and Zach, we have lots to talk about in the water. I wanted to start out a couple of news headlines today. First of all, they just barely lifted the flash flood warnings for Zion National Park. And even though the flash flood warnings are lifted, that doesn't mean that there is no danger anymore, because with those little slot canyons, it doesn't take much to fill those bad boys up, does it?
No, and as an individual that loves slot canyons and doing the whole rappelling thing and going through them and stuff like that, you always have to be really careful of that. And they're fun, but they're dangerous, so you have to be extra careful.
So they said in this news story that the storm could actually be miles away. It could be a long ways away, and it could still fill up a slot canyon. Explain that phenomenon to me. Is it just because the water, I mean, all water flows downhill, right? And when it gets to the slot canyon, there's not enough room for as much that volume, or what?
Well, yeah. I mean, just have a very confined channel, and you have a lot of water. And so a couple things happen. Is first of all, it gets deep, and it's fast to get that water through there. And someone that has done a canyoneering quite a bit, you just have to know the canyons. And so, you know, whenever I go into a canyon, the first thing, I'm a little bit more of a safety guy. So I always kind of look, know what's going on, how big the drainage is. But especially some of those in other places outside of Zion, I mean, their drainage could be miles and miles and miles away. And with those little monsoon, those little microbursts, they don't really cover a big area. And you can see that, like, you know, especially with the storms we just had, you'll just kind of look over and you'll just see this complete downpour. And maybe a mile away, there is no downpour. And so you just have to be really careful. And then even after, I've been in canyons where it's flashed, and then you go in there and there's logs and there's trees, and you just have to be prepared for it.
Right. I like to tell the story. So Canara Falls, right? Uh-huh. Canaraville, yeah. Canyon. It's kind of a slot canyon.
Sure.
We went hiking once, and this maybe 8-9 years ago, up there with my family, and we got to the lower falls before the ladder up, and it started raining. And my wife, you know, we're the mature adults in the room, so to speak. My wife's like, "Do you think we should leave or get to higher ground or what?" I said, "Yeah, it's kind of dangerous." And the water started to turn brown, right? And I'm like, "Okay, that's a telltale sign right there that we got problems coming." And it was raining, and so we hurriedly hiked down the canyon and made it out in time. Although at one point I actually slipped, and there was, because the water had risen, there was a rock right below the surface. I landed right on my left cheek and had a big old purple bruise on my left, not on my face, if you know what I mean, for a while. But and that by the time we got out, it had risen a few inches, and it was on its way to becoming really dangerous. So just because it's not a flash flood warning has been issued, just because it's gone doesn't mean that the danger is completely out of the question.
And even in Hilda, where we had that really tragic event with those vans being swept down, that wasn't a slot canyon. They were just next to the river, and the river kind of shifted funny and got behind them really quick before they knew what was going on. So
I remember, and that's been, what's it been, 4 or 5 years now?
No, it's been more like 9.
Oh, has it been that long?
Yeah, I was a commissioner at the time.
I just remember you were a county commissioner. Okay, I just remember the pictures of the, you don't understand how powerful water is until you see a picture of like that van wrapped around a tree, and water did that. Mm-hmm. Wasn't a plane crash or a car crash, that was water that did that to to them. Do you remember how many lives were lost on that one?
Oh, well, you had Keyhole Canyon, which is a slot up in Zion, and then you had the one out there in Hilldale, and that was quite tragic. Yeah. But if anybody wants to see the power of water, we have this really cool video on our social media. So if they could just go to Facebook and type in Washington County Water Conservancy District.
Mm-hmm.
We were recently pigging the pipes, and what pigging is we put this, basically it's a really expensive Nerf ball, into the pipes, and we push that through, and what it does is it scours the pipe and push out all the debris.
Oh.
And as that thing is going through, it hits a certain point, and where they're letting the water out, it's just kind of going slowly, and then all of a sudden it just explodes, and water's shooting up in the air, and water's going all over the place. And I think that's a good demonstration of the power of water and how strong it could be. And it's a really cool video. So, yeah, I just encourage people to go to our Facebook page and look at it.
And it's called Pigging?
Yeah. It's
okay.
Why they call it a pig, this is what I was told. It's kind of, I don't know.
Okay, we love stories, yeah.
It's an urban legend. But when you stick these things in, when they go through the pipe, they squill.
Really, like a pig, okay.
And that's why they call it a pig, because they're like, well, it's squilling like a pig.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true. It's I've been cute. Where they've pigged, and it doesn't sound like a squilling pig to me, but...
Pig in the pipes.
But like no, it's very, very important. And when I say these pigs that we stick in there, I mean, they're tens of thousands of dollars, but we have to do it all the time to make sure the pipes are clean. If not, we lose capacity and...
So the Water Conservancy District owns a few of these, or?
Yeah, pretty much every year we're pigging our pipes.
Wow.
And so.
And I guess they come in different sizes so they can fit different pipes. And
yeah, and the small ones are cheap, but the big one, like we have those big, large diameter, and they're huge. And so you actually have to have a backhoe picking up these pigs and putting them in the right spot. And then we just use water pressure to push it through. And yeah. And then when they get to the end, sometimes they just kind of like flop out, but this one, just because of some air pressure, air bubbles, and a few other things, it just shot like a cannon. It's pretty cool.
Wow. You know, it's funny because I was talking with my wife about this. When you're in an industry, there are certain words you use, certain things you talk about. So I am hiring a girl to run the board. Uh-huh. This is the mixing board here for BYU games on the weekends. And when we were texting back and forth, and I was talking about the board, and I was talking about all these different things, and she's like, I'm really sorry, but I don't understand what you're talking about. Because these are called pots. They're not volume controls. They're called pots, and this is the board. And, you know, this is a production computer, and this is the air computer. You know, it's just you get inside your industry, and you forget that a lot of people don't speak that language because they haven't been in it.
So. Oh, yeah. And I've seen, I mean, as you know, I'm an attorney and an engineer. It's funny how they both have their little lingos, like, you know, res judicata or, you know, habeas corpus. I mean, that's all those Latin legal words, and heat of hydration is the engineering. So
I'm pretty sure we don't have any pigs, though, in the broadcasting industry. I'm not aware of any.
I know a couple of pigs in that.
Except for the guy over there on the country. No, I'm just kidding, DJ. I didn't mean that. So. Anyway, we are talking water today with Zach Renstam. The other story in the news today talks about a harmful algae bloom at Panguitch Lake. Now, I don't know much about it, except they say, hey, don't drink it. Stay away from this stuff. Mm-hmm. It could be very harmful. Do you know any more about that, Zach?
Yeah, so we actually test for these algae blooms. We actually, the tough thing with the term algae is there's thousands of different type of algae. I mean, there's really a lot. And so some algae does this, and, you know, it's just one of those things.
So if I said, I have a virus, okay, well, which one, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with algae.
Yeah, and so some algae is very safe. You could swim in it. You could probably eat it and have no effect. But other algae, you know, if you drink the water right next to it, it could kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Some has odor and smell events. And so we actually test to find out what kind of algae we have. We're always worried about those neurotoxins type algaes and dogs seem to be particularly sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm.
But we know they're in the Virgin River. We know they're in other areas. Our state parks, they have signs up kind of telling people and have some pictures of what it looks like to stay away. And so it's a natural occurring algae. It's been here probably ever since. We're doing this. I should say the state of Utah is starting to test for it a lot more.
Okay.
And so
is it because of heat, or is it just the heat isn't necessarily a factor at all?
So the algae wants two things. It likes it to be warm, and it likes to have nutrients.
Okay.
And so when those conditions are ripe, you have these algae blooms. And So that's actually something we monitor in our lakes is the temperature and stuff like that.
To so make more likely in, say, in shallow water that is warmed by the sun. Okay.
Yeah, non-moving water, so it likes to be stagnant, and it likes to be warm, and it likes nutrients. And so those nutrients can either come from a lot of different places where if it's a lake and people are stirring up the sediment, that puts, you know, in the water.
Algae is like, yum, buffet,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. When there's cattle in the area and or just human, well, just waste, you know, that puts extra stuff into the water. And so, yeah, that algae is just kind of always there. And if it has a lot of nutrients and the temperature is just right, then it grows very rapidly. And like I said, you see it everywhere. Like one of the trails I like to run on by Santa Clara, there's a kind of a, I forget the name of the wash, but there's always just algae in that in the summertime. And I don't know what kind of algae it is because I haven't gone and taken a sample, but it's everywhere. And you have to be careful because you can't tell which ones are the really bad ones and which ones are the ones that probably won't hurt you.
That's why we need to use caution, I guess, because you just don't know.
Yeah. Okay. And unless you take a sample, and we do this, we'll take samples and send it to these special labs and they'll say, well, it's this type of algae. Unless you do that and send it off or you really know what you're doing, the best thing to do is if you see it, just kind of stay away from it.
And you do treatments, for instance, at Sand Hollow to keep the algae down or completely away?
Yeah, so what we do is we test for it, and we do a couple of things. First of all, we try to operate the lakes so the algae doesn't want to bloom. And so we'll move, because like I said, you know, there's nutrients and there's temperature.
Right.
And so we'll move water around to kind of stir the water up a little bit to make sure it doesn't get that stagnant temperature that it really likes.
Mm.
So sometimes that's bringing water from Sand Hollow. That's sometimes, you know, pushing water in, to Quail. And so we'll do things to make it so it's not happy. But when we do have those algae blooms, and we have them every once in a while, we have a couple different ways to treat it, depending on what kind it is. If it's a little bit on a higher plane, in the past, like the district hired a helicopter to come and fly over and treat the lake. This spring, we went out to Sand Hollow, and it was more a benthic type algae that's on the floor in a very specific zone. And so basically we went out and essentially put a hydrogen peroxide in a particular area to kill the algae.
So it could have blonde hair.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know.
And so we put some hydrogen peroxide in and you just kind of have to look at it because like the one at Sand Hollow, we had to treat it where we put these granules in there that would float down to the bottom where the algae was. And then they basically turned the hydrogen peroxide and, yeah, so we just kind of, we're always monitoring it. We're always sending people out to the lakes, diving, looking at the different layers. And the big thing is if you can just make it so the algae's not happy, we just don't have that. And so we've been very successful dealing with it that way rather than doing chemical treatments because chemicals are expensive.
That's something, you know, I don't think any of us think about, that you're trying to make it an environment where the algae doesn't want to live, right? Because we'd rather have people.
Yeah.
In there than algae in a lot of those places. And unfortunately, like you said, it actually seems like dogs are extra sensitive. We've actually had a few dogs die from drinking water on or near the algae blooms. So
yeah,
we don't want that. We love our dogs.
Oh, yeah. I'm a dog lover. But yeah, it's one of those things. If you have dogs and you're out, you have to be, you know, they get thirsty and they just jump in there or they play in it and just have to be cautious of that. But I want, you know, we test for it a lot. We do thousands of tests on just not algae, but tons of different chemicals to make sure our water supply is safe. And what's really nice is part of it is because most of our water supply comes from Zions National Park, which is a really good watershed. So we have really, really good, safe drinking water here. But we'll continue to test to make sure nothing comes up.
I was surprised yesterday or today when I came in and looked at the rain totals from yesterday at the airport. They only recorded 4/100ths of an inch, Zach. I was like, what? It rained more than that at my house. And I guess Enterprise got a lot of rain. But tell us about the storm yesterday. Did it? I mean, obviously, every little bit helps. Did it help much?
Yeah. I mean, any drain drop helps. I think that was your very classical monsoonal event where you have certain areas of the county that got pounded really well, like Enterprise.
And you say they got about an inch in one day?
Yeah, so their city manager, Adam Bowler, he texted me and said that they got over an inch of rain, which is which is wonderful for the farmers up there. They really needed it. But then, like, the airport, they got, just enough to get your car dirty type thing.
Yeah,
other areas got hit. And so, yeah, those little monsoonals, it's funny how they come through and they're not like a big storm. They're just kind of these little microbursts that kind of go around. But boy, I wish we had another 10 of those lined up, but it looks like it's going to dry out here.
Well, make some calls, will you, Zach? Let's get a few more of those lined up. Yeah, I swear to you, and maybe, I don't know, but I remember in the 90s when I first moved here, I swear we had big monsoon months every July, August. There were lightning and thunder and rain and floods, and it just doesn't seem like we have that as much anymore. So,
yeah, I mean, just a couple of years ago, we went 155 days without measurable rainfall, and we broke a record, and we just didn't break it by 1 or 2 days. We completely blew it out of the water. So, yeah, so we're on the water system, we're pessimistic this way that we're planning for a hotter and drier climate. And so when we do our models and predictions, we assume that, and then we hope for the best. So
yeah, plan for the worst, hope for the best, right? That's what my wife always tells me.
Yeah.
So the rain total for the year in St. George, 2.74 inches. That's about half of what we usually have at this point in the year. Clearly the drought is not over, even though we had some rain yesterday, huh?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just been really dry. The winter months were extremely dry. We broke a record for being, what was the driest winter we've ever had here in St. George? And the records go back to 1890, so we go back quite a ways now. So it was just really dry. The thing that we see in these droughts is, you know, if you go back and look at history, and you look at, like, in the 40s and 30s when they had a dry winter, what was the effect to the community? And they were worried about drinking water. They were worried, will they even have water enough for their cattle? Like, very.
Right.
But now, even though we had some of the driest events ever recorded, I can sit on the radio and say, hey, we have safe, reliable drinking water. We're good. And the reason why is because generations before me built large water infrastructure projects. And so Sand Hollow, yesterday when I checked, it was at 76%. Quill's a little bit lower than that. And if it wasn't for those big, large water infrastructure projects to store all that water for, you know, several years on end, we would be in a world of hurt right now. So we just got to make sure that we're passing that on to our kids now.
Somebody thought about us 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Now we need to think about whoever's going to be here 20, 30, 40 years from now. I don't think it's going to be me, but somebody.
Me either.
Can you give us an update before we go to break here on Chief Choker Reservoir? Where are we at on that?
Yeah, if you drive up there, and I get a lot of questions about it because there's a massive construction site going on. If you just drive up I-15 as you go to Cedar City and you look over there before the Anderson Junction, it's really easy to see it. And so right now we're actually building the core of the dam right now. So a lot of people might be complaining that we have a lot of trucks going from the Hurricane Bench area to Chief Choker, and we're hauling a ton of clay is what we're doing. And so massive amounts of construction. Don't go to the construction site because it's an active construction site. But as you're driving up I-15, you can look over there and see all the activity that's occurring over there. And so it's exciting to see things actually get built and not be stuck in the environmental review process.
Is there a target date on that one? Do we know about when it will be ready to start getting filled?
Well, so not this coming spring, but the following spring, we would like to start putting water into it then, and it should be there.
And the water for that, I know Ash Creek, but that is not the most reliable water source. You will actually be pumping water to it as well, right?
So we have multiple sources that will be going into that. So, of course, we're bringing water from the Ash Creek Reservoir all the way down that canyon. We have some side pipes that go up some of those side canyons, like Wet Sandy. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go up to the base of Pine Valley Mountain and capture water. Then if nobody needs water from the Tokerville Springs, like it's just excess, then we will pump water into it. And then also that reservoir will be holding reuse water. So Ash Creek Special Service District right now is building a reclamation facility right there at Confluence Park. We're going to treat that water to a very high standard and pump that water up to Chief Choker. And so it's just a mixture of lots of different water that'll be going in there.
All right. Well, we've got a weather break coming up. Zach, I thought maybe when we come back, we can talk a little bit about what's happened with the is it Pontemp Hot Springs? And now it's, we have a resort there now.
Yes.
It's open, and maybe talk about that water and the quality of it. Also, we always need to talk about the ick factor, right? And, and it, can people get over that? And, well, they're going to have to, actually, whether they can or not. They will. We talked about it a few months ago, the toilet-to-tap phrase that people like to use. That some guy in the media decided that'd be really funny or something. I don't know, but we'll talk about that, too, when we come back. Carrie is here as well, but she won't talk to us. She'll only smile. Hi, Carrie. Everybody wave to Carrie, right? And Zach Renstrom. We're talking water today on the Andy Griffin Show. It is 9:29. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and check in on weather. Maybe it's going to rain. Probably not. Maybe. We'll see.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 9:33 on KDXU. I'm Andy. Zach Renstrom is here as well from the Washington County Water Conservancy District. He's been on national television. He's in every kind of newspaper you can think of out here in the West. And, of course, you see videos of him online. And you're famous, man. You're like, you're not infamous. You're just famous.
Yeah.
I was quoting my favorite movie, Three Amigos.
Yes.
I love that movie.
And my kids don't appreciate it. I showed it to them, and they're like, Dad, this isn't funny. And I laughed the entire time.
It is so funny. Are you kidding me?
I know.
Is it our generation, maybe?
I don't know.
It's clean, most of it. I mean, there's like one line or something that's not very clean, but most of that movie is a very clean movie. And I'm like, they don't make them like that anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Now I'm going to start laughing about it. Thinking of lines.
The infamous. It means more than famous, right? The infamous El Guapo. Anyway, all right. Welcome back. Just got a text, Zach, from a listener. And by the way, if you want to be part of the show, you don't have to call in. You can, of course, 673-5890. Or you can text me anytime. I try to keep monitoring my phone. I don't always do the best, but you can text me at 435-467-5842. That's my phone right here. I'm holding it right in front of me. This text came in. Zach said, please ask Zach about the health of various aquifers in the area and if they're being depleted.
That is a great question, and it depends.
Okay.
So we have lots and lots and lots of different aquifers around here. And part of that has to do with just our unique geography.
Okay, let's stop for a second. Maybe people don't know what an aquifer is. Explain to someone what that is.
Sure, that's basically just underneath the ground where the water is located is the most simple
description. Okay, so a pocket of water underground.
Yeah.
Basically. And is it usually like mixed in amongst the minerals and stuff?
So if you took gravel or even sandstone, and you sliced it and you looked underneath the microscope, there's little areas of pockets of openness. And what happens is that water, or air, but when you get to the aquifer, it's water, that's where the water's at. It's just in those little pockets in between the soil's granules.
Okay.
And so what you want is you want to have a lot of those air pockets. So if it's a gravel-type material deep, then you have bigger pockets and more area for the water to exist, basically.
And one of the best examples here is under Sand Hollow. There's a whole bunch of those, right?
Yeah, so if you go to, like, Zions National Park and you're looking at all that sandstone, that's Navajo sandstone, and if you were to slice it and look at it underneath the microscope, it kind of depends where you're at, and there's a few other things, but it can be, you know, about 20% just open space. There's nothing in between that. And so that's a good place to store water, is you can put it in there. And so we here have a lot of different aquifers. And so it's unique here. So like up in, I'll use Bountiful. Bountiful has two aquifers and that's it. And
in the whole area.
Yeah. And it basically you have the runoff that comes off the mountain and they tap into that and you can go a little bit deeper, below a certain clay layer. And there's another one and that's it. It's a pretty simple area along the Wasatch Front. Here, because we have the Mojave Desert, the Colorado Plateau, and the Mojave Desert all come together in our county. It makes our county beautiful, but it creates lots of different geography, and each area has different aquifers. So the aquifer up in Enterprise is completely separate than, let's say, the aquifer somewhere else. We're doing studies, and we've noticed that even like the aquifer at Sand Hollow is disconnected from the aquifer over at Gunlock. And there's a reason why. There's fault lines that interrupt things. Sometimes you have certain soil that is very dense, so it doesn't allow water to travel through it. And so it just really depends where you're at. So up in Enterprise, that aquifer is under a lot of stress. And so that means it's dropping, which essentially means they're sucking more water out of that aquifer than, you know, Mother Nature's putting back into it. And so right now that aquifer every year is dropping about 2 feet. The aquifer up in Cedar City is also is under a lot of issues. And so they see that dropping up in that area.
This is not good, right?
No, this is really bad.
Okay.
And there's a couple of reasons why. It's first of all, because you're just taking out water. So if you have a well, let's say 200 feet deep, and then also the aquifer drops below it, you have to drill deeper, and then it costs more money to drill, costs more money to pump that water up, and then all of a sudden it becomes this race to the bottom, literally. The other thing that can happen is you can have ground subsidence, where the ground literally just sinks. And why we don't like that is when it sinks, what happens is those little areas between the soil all of a sudden collapse, and then water can't be stored there in the future. Mm. And so there's a lot of reasons why. And so what happens when we have that is the state engineer, she comes in and creates a groundwater management area, where basically her goal is to get it back to a safe, reliable yield. And basically what we do is we have the preparation doctor in here, where basically she'll go and she'll actually start saying, okay, you can't use water, you can't use water, you can't use water, you can't use water. And she'll start cutting people off from taking water until it reaches a safe yield.
Hmm.
It's, of course, if you're a farmer or a house, it's very tough because you could have a house that had been there 20 years and she will knock on your door and say, hey, we're really sorry. That well that you've been using, you have to turn on. You can't use any of that water anymore.
Hmm.
Prior preparation. So it's very controversial. So when we look at it, we kind of go through the county. We have lots of different ones. So it's interesting because the aquifer up in Cedar City, clear evidence, it's under a lot of stress. It's dropping. There's a lot of issues. But when we get to New Harmony, we're not necessarily seeing that. And so it can be close. If you come down.
And that's not very far away, 15 miles, right?
Yeah. The Enterprise area, the Hurricane area, the state engineer has created a groundwater management area there. But you go down to, let's say, the airport, that aquifer is doing great. But the problem with that aquifer is it has really, really nasty water. Like, if you drink that water, it would kill you.
Hmm.
And so we know that aquifer is not connected because of the water quality and a few other things. And so one of the things that the water district's doing is we're going through and looking at each individual aquifer, and we're doing in-depth studies. And so right now, like, we're really focused on the Gunlock area. We have a lot of wells out there. It pumps a lot of good drinking water. And we don't want to overpump it.
Right.
And so we are working with, just basically geologists and hydrologists to say, what is the safe yield? How much can we take out of this aquifer without hurting it? We're going to start doing that in this Snow Canyon area, and we'll just kind of start working our way through because it's very important. And a lot of people are going to have a lot of problems with this in the future.
So that water that's in these aquifers, is it moving? Is it like a underground almost river? Or is this water that pretty much goes there and stays there?
Another thing, that depends.
Okay.
So generally, if the water has a lot of total dissolved solids, so it has a lot of minerals in it.
I bet that's a TDS, right?
Oh, good job. Yeah.
Backronym, right?
No, that went the other way.
This one was a forward cronym.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So we actually test the water and we see what's in that water. And the older the water, the more generally TDS it has. And so we'll say, hey, this is really old water, which means it's been sitting there for a really long time. Sometimes tens of thousands of years it's just been sitting there.
Hmm.
And so when you pump it out, you know, the question is how soon does that water flow back into it? What's going on? And
the only way to find out is to pump it out, right?
Pump it out or test it. And so we can actually take water and test it. And so this is where I'm going to nerd out on people. But we can actually, when they start dropping nuclear bombs or just testing them in the open atmosphere, it created certain chemicals. And we can actually test to see if that water if that water drop has those chemicals in it. And we can test the age of that. And so we can go in and pretty much tell if that water dropped before or after we started doing nuclear bombs. And so there's so we have a pretty good way of dating the water up until that point, and then after that point,
does that have to do with half life and all that stuff?
Yes, yeah, yeah, treating them out. So there's things we go and we look at the water and we test the water and we see what's going on. And so water does flow in our neck of the wood. Water does not flow through our soils very well. And so what we really like is a crack. And so if you have that's essentially a fault. And so if we have a fault or a natural crack in the ground and they go for miles, you have a conduit basically that allows that water to flow through that. And so on the cracks or the faults, water does flow through that pretty good if it has that movement, but in other areas, it sometimes it moves very slowly.
Okay, so
I could go off.
The simple question, are the aquifers being depleted? Also, a follow-up, is there a map we can see the areas where the aquifers are? Is there somewhere somebody wanted to see them?
So I think the best place to go is there's two websites. So the Utah Geological Society, if you go into their website.
The UGS, by the way.
Sorry. That's a U.S. geological. I'm talking about the Utah geological.
Oh, there's the, okay. There's
yeah.
Aren't they related?
They work together very closely. Okay. Yeah, they have some great maps on there that do a really good job of outlining a lot of this stuff. But also the Utah State Engineer. So if you go to the water rights website, they also have a lot of good information on there, and they have a lot of these studies that I'm talking about, where you can actually go on and see all these studies and see how like they're recharging and stuff.
And I guess you, being the Water Conservancy District general manager, right, have to know all this stuff. You know, this is stuff that you kind of have to be abreast of.
So I'm abreast of. I mean, there's people that know a lot more than me on this very subject, and so my job is to go hire them and say, "Help us make the best decision here." And a lot of times they'll come and say, "I don't know," which is an acceptable answer. And I say, "Okay, what will it take to find out?" And so, like on the gun lock,
or who does know, right?
Yeah. Well, like on the gun lock system, we hired some great individuals, and I asked the question, "Do we have safe yield?" And they says, "We don't know." I says, "Okay, what is it going to take to find out?" And they says, "Well, we have to do these studies. We have to go drill monitoring wells." And I says, "Okay, let's get it done.
Do it."
Yeah. And so that's what we're doing right now, and we'll go over to Snow Canyon next and start doing those.
Okay. So I think I'm not going to speak for the person that texted in, but basically their concern is, besides the water we can see, you know, the reservoirs and the rivers, is there water under there that we can that we can tap into? And the simple answer is yes, but there are some extenuating circumstances with each of them.
Yeah, and that's, you know, something we spend a lot of time on, looking at it, seeing what we can do to improve our aquifers, like Sand Hollow Reservoir. If you go out there, and when that's full, you look at, there's 50,000 acre feet of water. Well, the water districts put 2 to 3 times that amount of water into the aquifer underneath that reservoir.
You say put it in there, like pumped it in there?
No, it seeps through the aquifer.
Oh, okay.
Basically, that reservoir is built on sandstone, like that, you know, sandstone Zions National Park. And that reservoir was designed to basically seep into the aquifer underneath it. And that's how much we put underneath that.
Seems like somebody smart must have had to figure out how much can seep and how fast it seeps, and then still be able to fill the lake up at the same time. I mean,
So before that reservoir was built, the U.S. Geological, so this is the U.S. Geological Society, they came and they drilled a bunch of holes, they did some testing, and so before that reservoir was built, they knew exactly how it would react. And it's done almost exactly what they predicted.
And they were right, huh?
And they were right, nice. And it's great because wells out there, they drilled, and we drilled and we knew there was no water. And now that it's been there, it's quite flush with water out there because we stored it there. But we have to protect that water.
Nice. Yes, we do. Let's take a commercial break. We'll talk more about that. Also, the hot springs when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
9:50 on KDXU. A couple of other headlines for today. The Red Cross is desperate for blood. They want your blood. And it's not even Halloween yet. No, they are out of blood, and they are offering incentives now. They're giving, like, T-shirts along with your cookies and orange juice or whatever it is. American Red Cross really could use your blood. In fact, one of the prizes they're giving away, a $1,500 Disney gift card. It's not for everyone doesn't get it, but you're entered to win that. So they are definitely looking for blood. Also, Big Shots Golf is now Crush Golf and Grill. No longer Big Shots. When you say Big Shots, it tells people how old you are, right? And then the Utah, you know, the little arch license plate? It is the second most popular personalized plate in America. So people love that thing. So there you go. We're with Zach Renstrom today. I don't know if you heard about this, Zach. Kai Beckstrand won American Ninja Warrior Monday night. Guy from St. George.
Yeah.
And actually, he and his little brother were two of the four semifinalists, too.
Wow.
So talk about an athletic family. Yeah.
I total respect there.
Can you do that ninja stuff with the hanging by your fingers and all that stuff?
I'm in my 50s now. I'm lucky to do 10 pull-ups.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I couldn't do one right now at this point in my career, I think. But that's okay. Congratulations, these guys. Kai has been involved. You know, his Jared, I think it's Jared is his dad. Is that right?
I don't remember.
They built and they actually have a ninja course here in St. George that they run. And so that's kind of a cool deal. Zach, I wanted to ask you about the hot springs. Please explain the relationship, the Water Conservancy District, to the new Zion Canyon Hot Springs Resort.
So what happened there is we basically supply the water to them, the hot water. People recreate in it, and then they send the water back to us with a check. And that's how it happens.
Cash money check. They're renting it, basically, from you.
Leasing. And so it was one of those things we wanted to figure out a way to open it up so people could enjoy those hot springs. But the location of them, we're not safe because of the floodplains, the rockfall. And so we went out and did what is called a PPP. It's private partnership, private government partnerships, basically. Public, private, I don't even know what PP says. Anyways.
It's like the squealing pig or something like that.
So basically what it is, we went out and we says, hey, we're going to offer this for a lease, this hot spring water, and we'll take proposals on what people want to do. And so it was an open process. We included Leviathan and Hurricane in that process. And so, the county was involved. And so, those four entities collectively, we selected a group that had a long history of running these things and had a really good reputation. And they got it. And so they went up and they built that huge, big resort now that's going on. I hear it's quite popular. I did take a tour of it and it's very nice. Like, it's really, really cool.
But you haven't been in the water.
I haven't been in the water. Yeah. So, yeah, it's really nice. And so now people can go and there is a fee to enter, but it's a really nice facility, very well maintained. And you can go and get in that hot spring water. And so they've done a little bit to treat it to kind of remove some of the sulfur smell, but you can go enjoy it now.
That is really cool. I think a lot of people are saying, why is the Water Conservancy District in the hot spring business? Well, you kind of aren't. You own the property. You own basically the water and the property, but you have long-term leased it out. What happens if they, and I'm not hoping sure. It never happens, what happens if they were to go out of business?
So the majority of their, where people, like the ponds and their facilities and stuff, just make it clear, that is not located on Water District property.
Oh, okay. It's
so
private property.
Yeah, they had to go buy it and do all that. So we have a very solid contract that requires a lot of things from them. And so if they don't act in certain ways, then we can just shut the valve and turn off the water to them.
Now, I had heard, and tell me if this is true, that it was important for you and the county and everyone involved that it remain affordable for local residents, not just be a tourist destination. Is that true?
Yeah, especially Leverkin City was really good about saying, hey, we want to make sure that the locals get opportunities to enjoy this water. And so from what I've been told, there are like season passes you can get, and there are certain things that they do that try to have like local discounts. And
cool.
So, I mean, it's still a business. They still are trying to make money. They still have employees and all that stuff. And it takes a lot. Like, most people won't be able to see it, but talking about pigging, they have to pig those lines every day.
Every day.
There's a lot of technology goes into what they're doing out there. And so, of course, that costs money. And so, but yeah, from everything I've been told, the mayor of Leverkin told me that it's been very successful. People are very happy with it. And it's just been a positive thing there for the community. So I'm glad to see that.
And the water they're using is water that you really couldn't use anyway, right? As it was?
Yeah, so it's basically water that has a lot of stuff in it, like the TDS and other things, like much, much saltier than the ocean. So you can barely, if you put this on any planet, it would kill it. drink it, it would kill you.
It would kill your grass. It would.
Oh yeah. Now once it gets diluted a little bit with virgin river water, we can flood irrigate with a little bit. But basically, we're getting all the water back, and so all they're really doing is they're utilizing it for some recreation. Cools the temperature down on the water a little bit, which is a good thing for us, and then it comes right back to us. And so really they're not taking any water, they're just kind of using it and then returning it right back.
I think, by the way, I think people have some unrealistic ideas of what the temperature water should be. For instance, because I'm a pool owner now and have for the last couple of years, I've found that actually pool water, if it goes below about 85 degrees, it's kind of cold, right? I mean, you want the sweet spot is right around 85 for pool water. You know, you don't want to go up into the 90s because then you're into hot tub, you know, area. I think some people, oh, I wish I had 60 degree water. No, you don't want to swim in 60 degree water.
So out there, they have polar plunges. I know that. I saw that.
Yeah, no, thank you. I'm not interested.
So you can sit in the hot springs for a while and then go. And the other thing that they're doing out there that's kind of interesting is they take water, they basically remove everything from it, so make it basically H2O, but then they'll add chemicals or minerals, I should say, back into the water. And so you'll go there and they'll say, this little pool here has the exact same chemical make as this hot spring in, I don't know, all over different places in the world.
Right. Yeah. I saw that. Aren't there like 80 pools of different countries and everything? The Dead Sea and stuff.
Yeah, they have the Dead Sea, so you can go float in it. And so I was talking to somebody that went in, and they said it was interesting to them that they'd go get in a pool and you could feel the difference. And then they'd go get in a different pool and they're like, yeah, you really can't, like, you can tell that the water is different.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So people go out there and enjoy it.
Zach hasn't been in those waters, but I'm going to ask you this, Zach. If you could get your swimsuit on and get in any water in the county, where would you go?
My hot tub in my backyard.
No, that's cheating. No, okay. Well, we'll take your house and the Zion Canyon Springs, because you haven't been in there. Where else would you go?
I know. Subway up in Zion's National Park. I love the Subway hike. And they have a polar plunge. It's a natural polar plunge, but they have a little pool there. And after you're going through especially on a hot day.
You're sweating.
And then you get through the true Subway, there's that pool right there. And I love jumping in that pool.
And it's cold?
Oh, it's freezing cold. It is so cold. But I love the shock to the system. Then you get out and you lay out on a rock like a lizard. I love that.
With the lizard. Yeah. Carrie, have you been in this cold pool that he's talking about?
Well, all the hikers do it.
I haven't been in it.
And you're just surrounded by this. It's just beautiful. I guarantee you've seen pictures of this pool.
And I actually maybe have been in it, but if I was in it, it was 45 years ago, and I don't remember. But I know we did some hiking when I was a scout in the Subway in the Narrows and stuff.
Then you've probably been in this pool.
Yep. I probably have.
It took me a minute to think of. But there's a lot of cool places in this county.
Yeah, I think so too. A great place to be. And Zach is keeping an eye on all of them, including the TDS amount in total dissolved solids, right?
Yep.
Hey, all right. I learned something today. Zach, thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, it's great
to be
here.
About out of time, but I appreciate you keeping an eye on the water for us. When someone says, and we only have a few seconds, but someone says, we're running out of water, do you take that personally?
Oh, no. I think it's a very, very good question that I ask every day.
Yeah, are we running out of water? And right now the answer is not yet.
Not yet.
Hopefully never. Thank you, Zach, so much. Carrie, thanks for coming in and hanging out with us. We'll be back tomorrow. Let's see. Tomorrow is Thursday. Oh, I will not be here. I apologize. I do have a little medical thing I've got to take care of tomorrow. But Mello will be in with Mayor Chris Hart from Ivins tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks for listening.